Quinnell, reel 3.
And that was that. That's your finish for the day, then, as far as the army is concerned.
When you were in the... Did you call them mess rooms or dining rooms?
Dining rooms.
When you were in the dining rooms, how was the food issued to you, and how, where did you eat it?
There were... You sat in this dining room with a section, but a platoon is divided up into four sections, and you sat with your section with a corporal or a lance corporal in charge of each section, and you sat at plain deal tables, plain deal forms, and you sat everybody sat next to one another, and as the food was served at the end of the table, so you passed it along.
So the NCO would have what, gone and got a Dixie full of...
No, not the NCO. Not the NCO. The mess orderlies.
I see.
You see, in the army, you've got a rota. And the sergeant of the platoon keeps that rota. And this day, two men are mess orderlies for the whole day. They have to go and get the tea and the stew, whatever it is, and bring it into the men in that platoon. Next day, the next two men on the rota. Now, the sergeant of the platoon kept that rota, and sooner or later, it was your job to be mess orderly. In addition to going going to the cookhouse and collecting the dixies of tea, etc., etc., you had to take them back to the cookhouse and clean them, which was not a popular job, but the reason that why it wasn't popular, because you might get splashed with grease, and we only had one uniform. We didn't have one uniform for everyday use and then smarten up for the evening in another one, just one uniform. And all the time I was in the army nearly 4 years, I only had one uniform.
Mm-hmm. Fine. Let's concentrate our attention on training now, the sort of training you had while you were there.
Yeah.
Was a great deal of attention given, did a great deal of attention continue to be given to physical fitness training?
That was the main thing, because...
How was that achieved?
It was achieved by extending the route marches. When we first arrived at Colchester, on the first day we went on a route march, just as we were, with no carrying no rifles or equipment at all. It was it was a hot day. We marched 8 miles. Now, to me, 8 miles was nothing. But we got back onto the parade ground, and one of the things the soldier has to learn is to stand absolutely still. And when we got back to the parade ground at the barracks, we were all ordered to halt, right turn into line, and some of the chaps fell flat on their face.
Were the route marches daily occurrences?
Yes, bar Sunday.
What time of the day?
Generally in the morning, mm-hmm. but sometimes in the afternoon. Now, at Colchester, we were issued with rifles. They just come out of store, and they were absolutely gummed up with grease. And it took two or three real good cleanings to before all this grease was got rid of. From now onwards, you are issued with a rifle, and in the butt of the rifle was a pull-through. That is to clean the barrel with. Now, pull-through consists of a metal weight, and it's about a third of an inch in diameter and about 3 inches long. That is attached to a very strong string. and at the other end is a loop. And in this loop, you put a piece of flannel, which is known as 4x2. The flannel was in a long strip, marked off in 2 inches. The flannel was 4 inches wide and marked off in sections of 2 inches.
I think that's probably one of the things that is still the same in the army. I don't think that's changed at all. It was certainly true when I did my military service. Yeah. What form did the arms training take at Colchester?
There was a miniature range attached to the barracks at Colchester, and there we were taught aiming, which became very, very important. But as far as our rifle was a Short Lee Enfield, a very, very good rifle indeed, real sturdy rifle. We were taught arms drill, slope arms, present arms, and then we were taught the various three positions in aiming. Standing aiming, kneeling aiming, lying aiming.
Mm-hmm. Was bayonet training brought in at this stage?
Yes. And then there was a field very adjacent to the barracks, and suspended sacks from a framework, wooden framework, were hung, and we had the bayonet fighting, the attack, and then the parrying.
There was another activity I know you were engaged in while you were at Colchester. You had some training in trench digging.
Yes.
What methods were you taught for trench construction in Colchester?
Well, to our amazement, we thought trenches were a straight line, but they weren't. We were taught trench digging to conform with the topography of the ground. For instance, if there was a slope in front of you, you wouldn't put your trench on the slope. You would put it just a yard back or a yard or two back from the edge of the slope. And then you were taught to make bays. Now, each bay would be somewhere in the neighbourhood of about 30 feet, and then would come a traverse.
Yes.
Traverse of about 2 yards in depth and 2 yards in width, and then another bay. The idea was that if a shell burst in that bay, it'd have a very limited effect.
And also it prevented enfilade fire,
yes,
didn't it?
Yes, prevented enfilade fire.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Is there anything else about the trench construction methods you were taught that you can remember?
Yes. Also, there was a communication trench. Now, trenches were dug in three lines. There was the firing line, that was the front trench, the support line, which would be anything from 40 to 50 yards behind it. And then the third line would be the reserve line.
But while you were actually at Colchester, were you taught about these three different complementary systems? Or was this something you learned later when you were in France?
We learned that later.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm concerned now with Colchester.
And Colchester.
I don't want to give the impression that you did communication trenches and support trenches.
I see.
At Colchester, the trench construction didn't consist of those three systems, did it?
No. Well, now the trenches consist all your earth that you put out. You put in front, and you about a yard in front of your front of the trench. You throw your earth there, and you would dig down until about 4 feet, and then you would dig down at the back of that. That would be the fire step. And then behind that, you call the back of the trench the parado. You call the front of the trench the parapet. On the Paradova side, you would dig down for another 18 inches to 2 feet.
Yes.
Thus leaving a shelf which was called the fire step.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that all of the methods you were taught while you were at Colchester, you actually used when you were in France?
Yes. Digging of trenches was the same, was similar in France as we were taught.
Similar?
Similar.
But not exactly the same?
Not exactly the same.
What were the differences?
Well, in France, you were, one very, very important thing was the... in addition to, for the infantrymen, there was the latrines to be dug. There was the ammunition stores. There was the trench mortar positions. And all those were extras.
And those
which you weren't taught in England.
I see. Was there any other thing about trench digging, trench construction, trench activities that you weren't taught in Colchester, that you didn't learn until you got to France? I'm trying to find out to what extent the training you got in Colchester prepared you completely for what you had to go through when you eventually got to France. And
I'll tell you this here and now, that 90% of the stuff we learn in England was absolutely no use to us in France.
Can you give me some examples of the sort of things you learned which proved to be useless?
You better switch off for a bit, I've got to think of it. Now in France, the routine of going into the trenches was that about anything from half a mile to 1 mile behind the line, a guide would always be sent out to guide you into the... because the trenches in France were a maze. And if you didn't have a guide, you could very soon get lost. But we weren't taught anything about that. We knew nothing about guides coming out to meet us. We weren't taught that in each bay would be three men, and one would be on sentry all night long, looking over the top, standing up, looking over the top. And his next relief would be sitting up right alongside his leg, so the gentle tap with his leg, the sentry's leg, could alert him. And the third man could lie down on the fire step and go to sleep. We weren't taught that.
Did your instructors at Colchester give you any instructions about noise, about being quiet while you're in trenches?
No. That was another thing we had to learn. To be absolutely quiet when you're in the line, especially at night time, because at night time sounds carry very, very easily.
Thought you told me that the instructors told you you had to whisper when you were in trenches, and when you started whispering.
That is so. We were told as we were going up to the line, to walk very carefully and not to and to speak in whispers. But when we were in France, I'm afraid that went by the board, because we used to talk in quite a natural voice. Because the first time we went into the line with the first Gloucesters, the guide laughed his head off when he found us whispering to one another. So we very soon learned that was not necessary.